Where were you born?
Wilkes County, North Carolina.
And how did you come to Harford County?
I came by train. I came up in 1919, 1st of August, for 2 weeks, got a job and worked till the 1st of November. Went back home, came back, got back into Bel Air January the 21st. Got married the last day of January, and I've been in Maryland ever since. Only just short trip back down home.
Why did you decide to come out to Harford County from North Carolina?
Well, I was in World War I, and while I was gone, the girl I was corresponding with, her folks sold out and come to Maryland. So when I come home, naturally I come to Maryland.
What was it like when you came here in the 20s?
Well, quite different to what it is now. They was hitching posts all up and down Main Street in Bel Air. More horse and buggies than there was cars.
Were people pretty friendly up here?
Yes, they was fairly friendly. They was several had came from North Carolina while before I did, and I met them, and of course the people I met mostly were friendly.
And what did you do for a living once you got here?
Well, I farmed. I made a contract with Steve Taylor and farmed the place up on Grafton Shop Road where John O'Neill lives now that summer. Then my brother-in-law lived over here on the old Wilson farm. So the house I lived in up there was badly in need of repair, and they didn't do anything to it that summer. So in December we moved back down here. And then in 22, in October 28, I went to Fountain Green and took that farm over, which is now, the barn is gone, but I stayed there until 29. Then I moved to Forest Hill on what was known then as the Brookhart place, and farmed it until 42. Then I bought a place over here on number one, moved down there, and I've been there ever since until first of this year I come down here. They didn't want me to. My wife passed away in 1970, and I've lived by myself, and my children didn't want me to stay there by myself, so I've been down here this winter. I plan on going back home when it warms up and try to straighten up the place and plant a garden.
Oh. Well, what kind of land is around here for? Is it pretty good land for a farm?
How's that?
Was the land pretty rich for you?
It was good farming land. We grew corn, and we had a little wheat most every year, and some oats, and I grew tomatoes every year that I was up here, but I mean that I farmed but one. 1941, that farm up at Forest Hill, we stepped off the field for 4 acres. We lacked just a few plants of having 4 acres, but not but a little. And we picked 2,616 bushels of tomatoes that year. Mm-hmm. Sent them to Baltimore. Mm-hmm.
What kind, you? I guess you didn't have the modern kinds of equipment when you first started in farming. What was it like? What was it?
I done all the farming I done up here was with horses and milk by hand. I milked cows for 22 years and done it. The two last years I was on the farm, I done all the plowing with a tractor and disc, but that's the only tractor work I had.
Mm-hmm. Were most of the farmers up here, were they growing about the same thing as you were, corn and tomatoes?
Most of them, most pretty near every farm would have patches of tomatoes. And they was canning houses then all around over the county where you could haul them to the canners.
Hmm.
But I could do better sending them to Baltimore for wholesale than I could local.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Was it a hard, what was your day like? What time did you have to get up?
One whole year, when I lived at Fountain Green, I got up 20 minutes after 3, because I had 30 head of cows, and just me to do it. Most of the time, I tried to keep a man to help me, but a lot of times you had one, and then maybe you didn't. So that whole year, I got up 20 minutes after 3. The truck come by to pick up my milk, and it was there 15 minutes before 7 o'clock. And the milk had to be cooled down to 60, so you had to get up and hustle. I'd get the milking done, put it in the water, run the pump while I was finishing milking, go to the house and get my breakfast, come back, and by that time I had to get the milk out to the road.
Hmm.
I always, all the time I ever shipped milk, was on an early truck. Even up at Forest Hill, the truck was always by 7 o'clock and sometime before out of the lane, and so you had to get up and move.
Mm.
Wasn't like it is now when they have a tank and they put it in the tank and let them come pick it up.
Mm. And then after you got the milking done, what would you do?
Well, is to get your team ready and do whatever you had to do. The hay was to cut. You always had to try to get enough hay in the barn to last through the winter. Grain was to cut. It was all done with a reaper then, team and there was always something to do.
Mm.
I tell the folks, I used to do a little fishing when I was down home, and I had the people up here to want me to go out with them, but with a dairy herd, you don't have time to fish.
Mm. Well, now what about the seasons? Now, say in the spring, what would you have to do after the winter cold? What would you do in the spring?
Get the manure out, plow the ground, and get it ready for whatever you was going to put on it. Most of the time, we had a patch of oats. Well, you had to get them out pretty early. Then you got your ground ready for corn and tomatoes. Most of the time we tried to put some manure on the grazing ground, on the pasture. And a lot of times every two or three years we put some lime on the pasture. Always something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, up that forest hill, we had three heating stoves and three cook stoves to cut wood for, because I had a man lived over on the road. The house is gone now. And then the boss man and his wife lived in the other end of the house. And each one had a cook stove and a heating stove.
Mm.
There was a lot of wood to cut. I was responsible for that, getting the wood for the boss and his wife, and of course the hired man he helped. We always furnished him a wood.
Mm. Then what about as the spring went on to summer, what would you have to do?
Well, it was to cultivate the corn, and if you had hay crop of clover in it, or alfalfa, you had to get that in when it was time. So there was always something to do.
Mm. Was it very hot in the summer?
Well, I don't know was I ever seen as hot a season as it was this last summer to take it all the year. Now, you had days like that, but I don't believe I ever seen it as hot all winter, I mean all summer, as it was this last.
Mm. And then now, what about as summer went into the fall? What would you have to do in the autumn? And
well, there was your late hay crop to put up and your corn to cut. And them days, you went out in the field, of course the silo was to fill. Went out in the field and cut and shocked your corn. Then when you got that done, you went back and husked it out and bundle the fodder up, pick up the corn and haul it in. Wasn't done like it is now.
Did you have to do the corn by hand?
Yes.
Mm.
All the farming I ever done was done that way. In fact, they was just now and then one that was using corn pickers by the time I quit farming.
Mm.
And of course, a lot of the farmers at that time had tractors, and a lot of them was putting milkers in. But when I first come to this country, there was no such thing as a milker.
Hmm.
Only this kind.
Mm-hmm. Did you have migrant workers or any people?
I never did. Now, some of them did, but I usually could pick up a local man to help.
Hmm.
Now I could, the year I had so many tomatoes, I could use some extra workers if I could have got them, but you just couldn't hardly hire people at that time.
Hmm.
And they, to my knowledge, there was no migrant workers handy around. Now they was some in around Aberdeen, but they didn't get out in the country.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. about what price would you get for your corn at when you first started out? Do you remember?
We hardly ever sold any corn.
Oh.
We filled a silo, and then we mostly ground the corn for cattle.
Oh. So you depended on the tomatoes for your cash crop?
That is the main cash crop at all.
Mm. And about how much would you get for them?
That went. I sent tomatoes to Baltimore for as high as $1.37 a bushel, and I've sent them down there for 20 cents.
Oh.
Now, you don't make anything on tomatoes when you hit a slump. The first year I was at Fountain Green, the cannery over there on the Fountain Green Road at that time, which is a I can't think of the lawyer's name now that owns it, but Todd and Holden.
Oh.
There was a cannery on that place, and he gave the boss man a pound of tomato seed, and I sold them. Well, I never seen the man. When I was ready to pick tomatoes, Gentry had bought the old Durham Cannon House, and he wanted my tomato crop. Mr. Edwards told me I'd better talk to the man that owned the Cannon House over there. He'd always got the tomatoes off of that farm. And I called him, and he said, oh, I've got your tomatoes contracted. I said, how come? I never seen you, as I know of. He said that I give your boss man a pound of seed, I can hold your crop. So I hauled a little over 1,000 bushels of tomatoes over there. And it was a dry season. And they weighed everything. Then we had, right at the last, we picked a load on a Thursday. We'd been picking a load and hauling them over there, but that time we was so late we didn't have time. We had to quit for milking. And it had been very little rain through the tomato picking crop, but that night it started raining. Rained all day the next day. Saturday morning it was clear. Went out in the field and loaded that load of tomatoes and took them over there, and they weighed them. Then they dumped four boxes, took the boxes back and weighed them. Well, I had weighed my boxes when I took them out of the barn to start with, and you could put 10 boxes on platform scales and they'd weigh between 95 and 100 pounds. Well, when they weighed those four boxes, they said 14 pounds. And I kicked on it. And they said, oh, you'll get a dry weight, too. But when it comes Saturday, they counted off 14 pounds for all. And I kicked on it. Didn't do no good. So the next year I went to Bel Air and bought my seed. I put out 3 acres of tomatoes, and when they was ready to start picking, I didn't know what I was going to do with them. But John Rice, a huckster, lived there close to me. He went in Monday morning with a load of calves and come back, and he said, Mr. Walsh, have you got any ripe tomatoes? I said, yes, there's a ripe smart scatter out there. He said, pick them, let me take them to Baltimore tonight. I said, I can't get over the patch today. He said, I'll send the boys out there to help you. So we picked over the patch. We got 37 bushels. After we got some milking done and supper ate that night, we went out and loaded them, and he left next morning about 4 o'clock and went in with the tomatoes. He told me, though, that they sold for 90 cents that morning. Come back, he brought $1.15. So I made good that year on tomatoes. I sold 2 loads at $1.37.5 a bushel.
Huh.
When you can do that now, of course I had several down as low as 25 and 30 cents.
When was that during? When was that low like that?
When they'd get a slump, get a big bunch in, why?
Mm-hmm.
Then the price had dropped.
Hmm.
But I done good. That's the best year I ever had. Take it all the year around.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Well, then I didn't haul any more to Cannon House after that, as long as I stayed in Fountain Green. But of course the price was up and down, but it was a right good thing to have. I really made more clear money on tomatoes than I ever did on milk.
Hmm.
Because you'd buy a cow, maybe she'd go to bad, you'd send her to Baltimore. $35 or $40 was the highest you'd get, and maybe you paid $140 or $150 for her.
Hmm.
Of course, now cattle on the market not like they were then.
Mm-hmm.
So as to clear money, I made more clear money off of tomatoes than I ever did off of cows.
Hmm. Were tomatoes hard on your land?
No, tomatoes hits. You grow a good crop after a crop of tomatoes.
Hmm. Did you have to do much fertilizing and things?
We usually fertilized the tomatoes pretty heavy.
Mm.
We made the rows with a corn planter, set the width we planted corn, and went both ways, and then set your plants in the cross.
Mm.
And we usually run 250, 300 pounds to the acre each way.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well then, now after you had your harvest of your crops, what would you do toward winter when it got cold around here? What did you have to do?
Tend to the cows. You had to keep them bedded, and you had to keep your barn clean. Now up that forest here, we had a romping shed, and that's where they stayed. After what weather got real cold, they didn't go out anymore.
Hmm.
Had a watered trough in the romp shed. You had to clean it out every once in a while. Cut wood.
Hmm.
There was plenty to do.
Mm-hmm. Did you have, for the milk, how did you set up how, like, when you milk the cows, then what would you do with the milk that you got from each cow?
Took it out and strained it in the container over a cooler, they called it. Run down over that and into the bucket, into the can,
mm-hmm.
till you got the can full, and then you set it in a tank of cold water.
Mm.
Up that forest hill, we had an ice house, and most every year for the first 6 or 7 years that I was up there, we would fill the ice house during the winter at the pond down in the pasture. And then we would go up there of an evening and pull ice out of the house, put it in the box, and that would cool the milk that night and be cool for the next morning.
Hmm.
Then we bought a 6 or 8 years before I left up there, we bought an electric cooler,
mm-hmm.
and he used that.
Mm-hmm. Were many people using the Ma and Pa to take their milk down to Baltimore?
Several was. It was close to the railroad track, but we always shipped by truck because they'd come right by the lane and pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember who was the shipper? Do you know who the shipper was?
Well, Doc Wagoner was the man that hauled our milk for a long time. Well, I believe he owned the truck line as long as I stayed at Fountain Green.
Hmm.
Then I really forgot who owned the line run by Forest Hill.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the winters, when you got back, what were the winters pretty bad around here?
We usually had a lot more snow in the winter than we have lately around here.
Hmm.
Now, while I was at Fountain Green, 2 or 3 times, there's been as high as 3 days I couldn't ship milk. You know where Fountain Green is.
Mm-hmm.
I went out to that lane to the road when you couldn't, and look up towards Mount Zion Church when you couldn't tell where the road was. Just drifted.
What would you do with all the milk if you couldn't get it shipped?
If you didn't have cans for it, you were just out of luck.
Oh.
If you had cans, you could keep it over.
Mm.
But we had to churn some of it.
Would you keep all the butter that you made?
Well, not all the time. We got rid of part of it.
Mm-hmm. Where could you sell that at?
You can sell most any store around.
Hmm.
And a lot of times you could sell some around the neighbors that knew you that didn't have cattle.
Mm-hmm.
You used having to make butter, they would come for butter.
Hmm. Would that be something? Would you do the churning, or?
Yes.
Was that pretty hard to do?
It's not very easy. Oh, we got an electric churn towards the last,
uh-huh.
but the first, we done it with a churn like this. Then we got what they call the cedar churn, which is a round churn, and you crank it.
Mm-hmm.
Then later we got an electric churn. You just put it in and plug it in the wall and let it churn.
Huh. Let's see. What were the roads like?
The roads like?
Yeah.
Mud.
I would think that the milk trucks would have trouble getting to you.
Well, now they didn't. They would. They come down here to Emerton, but they wouldn't go any further. The 2 years I lived over here, we had to haul the milk out to Emerton until the summer of the last year, Bell's farm over here, which McPhail, no, I think. Anyhow, it was known at that time as Bell Farm, and they had the biggest herd of anybody around. They finally got the truck to come in there, and then we could just drive across over there.
Mm.
But if it got bad, then we had to drive out to Emerton.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did they pay you for the milk?
You got checks from the dairy in Baltimore, 15th of the month.
Oh.
You could count on that unless it come on Sunday.
What dairy was it?
Well, we shipped to more than one. Western Maryland was the one we shipped to mostly.
Hmm.
Of course, we had a dairy association that placed our milk. They was responsible for seeing that we had a market for it.
Hmm.
Which they got 2 cents a gallon.
Mm. Now, what about
across from the southern states was a store we bought a lot of feed from there, and then after I went to Forest Hill, while the southern states come in there, and the company called the Sunshine Feed Store bought out the store on the other side. So we dealt with them for feed. Once in a while we would order feed out from Baltimore, but mostly we bought it local.
Mm.
Then after I quit the farm up there and moved down here, I worked in the Sunshine Feed Store for 2 years. We got to where we ground so much hay, so much dust, I had to give it up. I'd go home one night and just felt like I could breathe just about this far enough. So.
Mm. Well, would you trade things, you know, that you made on the farm for other things, or was it all money?
Mostly we just sold and bought.
Hmm. Were there places that would give you, like, farmer's credit that, you know, and wait, like, till you could pay them later on when you got your crops in?
We always could get credit. It wasn't a farmer's market like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
You just had to stand your own security.
Mm-hmm.
If you had good credit, we never had no trouble getting anything we wanted. If we didn't have the money for it, we went and bought it, paid for it when we could.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, now, when you got into the 20s, you had the Depression. Did you have very much effect on that? Did you feel that?
That we felt that plenty. It cut the price of milk down to 29 cents a gallon. I shipped milk 29 cents a gallon to the average of 19 cents a gallon for surplus. And there's no money in milk when you have to do it like that.
Hmm.
But you had the cows. You had to do something.
Hmm.
Milk them and ship it in is all you could do.
Mm-hmm. Were there lots of people out of work around here?
Well, not so many around that you could hire on the farm. Now, there were people out of work, but you couldn't hire them to go do the work like we done on the farm because they wasn't used to it and they just wouldn't do it, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could pick up some like that, but...
Mm-hmm.
It's like it is today. If you cut out today and put the people out to work on farms like we done, they just wouldn't do it.
Well, now, I guess you must have liked farming to have stayed in it for your whole life.
Well, I was raised on a farm. And Dad had a little farm, 72 acres, and he was a carpenter by trade. He never worked on the farm, and only just, if he was out of work and there's work to do, he'd work on the farm. But for a trade, he was a carpenter. So I run the farm at home for 7 or 8 years before I was drafted in the Army. When I come home, one of the other brothers had started the crop, and I was 25 or 26 years old, and I thought, time for me to get out. He wanted me to take the farm over again, but well, if something grows on you as you work at it, and I like to farm, I like to see stuff grow, I like to handle cattle and horses. I kept cows after I moved down there where I own now. I kept cows for 15 years after I moved there. A couple of cows, both calves. They're too old. Take them and grow them till they were big enough to sell on the market for $100 or so pounds a piece.
Did you have a preference on what kind of cow you liked?
Well, I liked the Guernsey cow the best, but for a milk herd, you need I figured you needed a mixed herd of Guernseys and Holsteins. Jersey is a good cow, but they don't stand the winter as good as a Holstein or Guernsey. Now they've got other breeds in now, but that was the three, Jerseys, Guernseys, and Holsteins was the three main herd.
Did you ever raise any chicken or?
Oh yeah, we kept chickens all the time. And while I worked at Sunshine Feed Store, part time I had as high as 300 hens.
Was there much government regulations or interference with farming?
Plenty. And I mean to tell you, they come around and if your barns wasn't up to now, they let you know it.
Let's see. I see that you were a charter member of the Oak Grove Baptist Church. Could you tell me a little bit about how that got started?
Well, there was a lot of people from down in where I come from was from the Baptist denomination. And when they come up here, there was no church for them to go to of that denomination. So I went here and yonder to different places. Of course, I didn't go regular, because we had no transportation at that time. So the two men come to the field where I was working, and wanted to know if I would be interested in helping to organize a Baptist church after they had held a revival meeting over there at what was then known as the WTCU Hall. That's just above Mount Zion Church. And I told them I would. And so that we met there at that hall, and 32 people that was Baptist, they joined, and four others joined as candidates for our baptism. And that's when that church was started. Of course, at the time we done that, we didn't know where it was to be built. It was to be built in the vicinity of Bel Air somewhere. So they got that lot down there, and we, that is in 31 when we, December, when we organized, and in July we met down there. They were 4 teams with ham scoops. Tom Lewis was the builder, and he staked off, and we, no, they was 5 teams. They was 4 scoops and 1 plow. We started to dig the basement. 2 of the teams was not just what you'd call steady, so they was really in the way more than they was good. So the next, well, from then on, we just had 2 teams to scoops and 1 to the plow. 4 days later, we had the basement dug. Walls all ready to start putting blocks in. Church has grown quite a little since that.
Yes, it has.
32 charter members. Uh-huh. And now there's, well, there's between 12 and 1300.
Did you ever think that it would grow so big?
No, not at the time it was organized. I thought it would grow, but I never thought about it growing that much. But you know, that's been quite a while.
Yeah. 50 years? And that you were one of the original deacons? And
yes, I was. There was 4 men ordained in late 32 as deacons. Tom Morrison, Bill Edwards, Avery Bertram, and myself. They've all been gone for some time. I'm still Deacon Emeritus. I can attend any of the deacons meeting. I have no voting privileges, but I can attend and talk on any subject that's brought up, but I have no voting power.
Mm-hmm. And you were the treasurer of the church for a long time?
Am yet. I believe the lady that was talking to me the other night said 40 years, but it lacks just a little of being 40.
Mm-hmm.
It's been quite a while.
Mm.
I was put in 47, September. So it won't be long to be 40.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what about, you said you came up to Maryland in pursuit of the woman that you later married, and so you got married, and so then what, did she help you on the farm as well?
Well, she didn't work on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
She run the house,
mm-hmm.
done the housework. She helped the garden. We always had a garden. She helped on the lawn part of the time. She looked after the kids and the cooking.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me about your children.
Well, we had two daughters and two sons. This is the youngest daughter that you met here.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest daughter lives in Delaware. Ralph runs the Plaza Ford, and Russell is with the Southern States Cooperative feed and seed business.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
He's been with them for 30 some years. Do you know Ralph?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Seems like most of the folks around know him.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
I guess when you first came up here, there were a few automobiles around.
There was a few. There was not many farmers at that time had automobiles.
Hmm.
I mean, now there's one now and then. One of the older, steadier farmers had cars, but most of them just owned a horse and buggy. That's why they was more hitching posts in than they were mm-hmm. parking places.
Was Bel Air a quiet little town?
You could go in Bel Air on Saturday night and you had a big crowd. People seemed like they... I never did go so much on Saturday night because Sunday morning you had to get me up just the same.
Oh. Hmm. Did you have electricity when you first started out?
We had a home plant down that Fountain Green. I had a 6-horsepower engine and a home plant. And you run that engine to keep the plant up. We had electricity there. But when we went to Forest Hill, we didn't have for a while. And then put electric in. We burnt kerosene oil lamps up at Forest Hill for some time after we moved up there, but then they put the line through. Everybody practically went on.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel much effect around the World Wars? Was there much effects of the World War around here? Like, did they want your produce for the...
Well, it affected quite a little. it made one thing. Aberdeen and Edgewood, they paid more than the farmer could afford, and that made it hard on the farmer to get help.
Mm. And then, I guess, when you moved to Emerton, what was this area like? Was it mostly farms?
Yes. This place here was a nice farm up in fine order.
Mm.
This place up here, just this side of Emerton, on the right of the road that's drilled up so,
mm-hmm.
that was one of as nice kept farms as it is in this country.
What was that, the Wilson farm?
No, this I forget the name of that farm. Olfactors farmed that farm at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that farm in number one shape, but mm-hmm. it was willed to a young girl in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And she never did move to this country as I know of, but they said that she willed it to the wild game, and that's why it's left grow up.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be a game preserve.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So the whole farm just rolled up like this along the road.
Mm.
This was what was known as Judge Preston's farm, and there wasn't a nicer farm in this country, and it was all down in there,
mm-hmm.
in fine shape.
Mm. Now, did you know Judge Preston?
Just when I seen him,
mm-hmm.
He picked me up one time when I started down the road and brought me down to the corner when I was going over to my brother-in-law's farm.
Mm-hmm. Were there any stores or things right here at Emerton?
There was two stores at Emerton and a post office. Well, the post office was in one of the stores.
Hmm. Now, they used to say that the farmers would gather on rainy days sometimes at one of the general stores. Would you ever do that?
Well, sometimes I'd go out to Tucker's store when I was up that Forest Hill, which is not Tucker's anymore, of course. And Fountain Green store when I lived down there, which was a store where that little bank is now.
Mm-hmm.
It burned down years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a gathering place for that community.
Mm-hmm. What about the mills? Did you ever go over to any of the mills to get your things ground?
Yes. When I lived over here, we went over across the mountain road to a mill over there. Then when I was at Fountain Green, there was a mill there in Bel Air I went to. Then when I went to Forest Hill, there was two mills over there. I sold some wheat and we always took our corn and wheat to the mill and exchanged it for meal and flour to make our bread.
Mm-hmm.
Carr's Mill was one of them over there. can't think of the Evans name right now. You get so you can't think.
Well, I think you did pretty good. Would farmers plant things, you know, sometimes by the signs of the moon or stuff, or was that just a wives' tale that they didn't listen to?
My boss man was very strict on that. Now, the man I farmed for at Forest Hill sold out there, went to Forest Hill and bought that farm, and I went up there, and so I farmed for him for 21 years.
Now, what were some of the things that they believed?
Well, they was very particular on what time you planted your corn, more especially. That and all of his garden stuff, he was very particular when he planted it. And he was a good gardener.
Let's see. Well, what about did you feel that they have the Extension Service or the University of Maryland Agricultural Department to help out farmers when they had questions?
Well, they didn't get around to us very much. Now they would. Somebody come out once in a while, but they didn't do much for that back them days.
Do you think that farming got easier as we had more modern conveniences? Or
it looks a lot easier. of course, it's really expensive the way they do it now. All this machinery costs you as much now to buy machinery and stock of a big farm as the farm would cost. Of course, one man go out and do a lot more than a half a dozen would do back them days. We used to fill silos, cut the corn and throw it down, and wagon come along and pick it up and hand it up to him, and then pull it off into a cutter. Now then they take a cutter and go to the field and cut it and come back and blow it up in the silo. One man can do a lot more than a whole gang would. But that's one thing that kept farmers closer together than they are now. They swapped work and worked together and helped one another.
Would people help each other, like build the barns? I hear so much about barns.
Well, they didn't do as much of that up here as they did down home, I don't believe, because at the time I come up, they mostly had their buildings built. Now down there, they used to go to log raisings and build log houses and log barns and such as that. But they depended on swapping work for the threshing and silo filling. Any time you got in a pinch, you could call on somebody and get some help. A lot more, I believe, then than they do now.
Was it harder to start out? Was it hard for you to start out on your own?
It was pretty hard. there was one thing. Wiley Hopkins and Dick Bodie was friends of the Southern people. When I come to this country, it was the Second National Bank then, and Wiley Hopkins was president, and Dick Bodie was a treasurer. Mm-hmm. And I could go to the bank and get money any time after I got up here and got acquainted. If I needed money, I could go to the bank and get it any time.
Hmm. Well, some people have talked about that there was a little bit of a resentment of the people that were here in Maryland, of all the Southerners coming in all at once.
Well, there was some, but you'll find that, I think, pretty near everywhere you go, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had some mighty good friends that was Maryland people.
Mm-hmm. If you had it to do over again, would you still have been a farmer?
I guess I would.
I think you would too.
Well, when you grow up like we did, you don't know anything else. Now, my two older brothers, they left home and went out as carpenters like my dad. Well, somebody had to do something at home, so. And I liked it, and so I just run the place. Of course, my dad backed me in. But the place has grown up.
Is there anything else that we can cover? We've talked a long time.
Well, I don't know.
Is there anything else that, you know, we might cover or talk about or something you might...
Well, when I quit the Sunshine Bean Store, I went out as a carpenter. I never had done a lot of carpenters, but I went out. I worked on a lot of old buildings. I worked for one contractor for 8 years, and then he retired, and I went to another and worked for 5 years. Then I retired, and I worked with a nephew that worked in aluminum through the summertime. I worked with him for about 12 years, and then I just quit.
And went back to farming?
No, I just quit. And I haven't been doing anything. I've, for the last 2 years, I've not went out and done any work to amount to anything.
Uh-huh.
Tended the garden and mowed the lawn. You get, after a while, age creeps up on you, you have to quit a lot of that.
Well, what would you attribute your long life and good health from?
Getting out and working now.
Eating a lot of the produce that you had on the farm that's not processed like it is today, maybe?
We've always grown our own vegetables, baked our own bread most of the time. I've been doing that ever since my wife left. I baked bread, cornbread, once in a while baked biscuits, but of course I use some loaf bread, but That's a lonesome life when you lose your companion and undertake to live by yourself.
Mm-hmm.